to tell me how many books there in the, that are in the Old Testament. Do not blurt out. I want somebody to raise their hand and say, how many books are in the Old Testament? We know there are 27 in the New. Judges. Everybody find chapter 17? So anybody want to answer the question? Ron. There are 39. Are you sure? So would Jesus have had 39 books? How many would he have had? Well, yeah, we do know for sure. He had 22. Well, actually, he didn't have any books. He had scrolls. But he had 22 scrolls. You say, what? Folks, this is called reading the Bible for a change. The book of Judges is written, and I'm just going to go back to Revelation. Revelation is written as it is written, meaning you ought to pick up on how it's put together. Book of Judges is chapter 1 through 16, is very chronological. Chapter 16 ends with the death of, don't look, answer the question, one of the most well-known judges. His name is Samson. But here's the weird thing. If you understand chronology, you realize Samson would have been at about the same time the last judge was. And who was the very last judge? You know, Saul was the first king. He was the guy that anointed him. His name is? Samuel and Samson were parallel. How could that be? Well, because Judges is organized like this. And one of the reasons Jesus had less books than we do wasn't that he had different material. The scrolls were put together differently. So you didn't have 1 and 2 Samuel, you had Samuel. You didn't have 1 and 2 Kings, you had Kings. You didn't, you know, Jeremiah and Lamentations were a book. The 12 minor prophets were a book. It doesn't take real quick, you realize, I see where to get to 22 from. It's organized differently. Well, the book of Judges, all you have to do is read, and something just really will, we don't have time to really do this. We'll just look at it. Chapter 17. Says there was a man of Mount Ephraim whose name was Micah. And you get into this really, really bizarre story of a guy making an idol. And you're like, what? Look at chapter, 17 and verse 6, would you? Frenchie, are you there? No, Frenchie's not there. Cliffy's there. Read it for me, Cliffy. If you read carefully those two chapters and you're interested, you'll quickly realize these two chapters don't happen at the end of the book. They happen towards the beginning, of the era, not the book. You got what I'm saying? How would you know this? You have to read the details of the story. And you got to know the broad chronology of the judges. And the judges are hard to know. Because part of the problem with the judges is, and I am a great artiste, here is Israel. Really, very few judges ruled over all of the land. They would rule over a couple tribes up here or a couple tribes here. Samuel is one of the few that seems to have impact every place. Many of them just had rulership over a small area. That's part of the problem when you get into 1 and 2 Samuel, and you get into Saul, and you get into David, and you get into Solomon. And when Solomon dies, immediately the kingdom does what? Because it was never very unified. It was always delicate. These are little things you learn from just doing that thing called reading the Bible. Then we go to chapter 19 for the worst story in the Bible. I don't even want to read it, so I'm not going to. We'll just read the first couple of verses. And it came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel. So we're in the same era, correct? Era. That there was a certain Levite sojourning on the site of Mount Ephraim who took to him a what? A combine. You know, the kind you have in, you know, Illinois, Iowa, it cuts corn. Combine. Linda, what did we learn on Wednesday night? What did she called it? Small house. Anesu says in Zimbabwe, when you have a combine, they call that small house. And Linda, I like your term too. And Ade, none of this, buddy. Side cheek. Right, Ade? By the way, if you have a side cheek, Linda's going to take care of the other cheek with a shotgun. This guy has him a concubine. Of course, you know any Christian reading this, most people just stumble through this stuff. It's just words on a page. I had a professor in Bible college. He was being pious, of course, because piousity was rampant there. You know what I mean by piousity? I had all the boxes checked. He said, at the end of the year, he said, you know, I read the whole Bible through last year. Why does this stick with me this many years later? And he said, I don't know if I learned anything new. How do you read the Bible another chapter and not learn? Well, he wasn't teaching anything. He didn't know anything to teach. Sad to say, he taught a couple classes there, and he stole the material from other sources 100%. Sometimes down to the jokes. So you got a guy that has a concubine. By the way, is there any place in the Bible that God says it's okay to have concubines? Are you sure? Then why did he have one? Yeah, you have another one of these. Let's look at the last verse, chapter 21. Cliffy, you're it, man. It's chapter 21. I think it's 25. Chapter 19 through chapter 21 is the easiest to prove that it happened at the beginning of this era. Hey, there are people that are alive that were there at the beginning of the era of the judges. And the era of the judges lasted about 340 years. Even Frenchie is not that old. He has made 270-something, but not 340. So unless these people lived a long time and we didn't know it, chapter 19, 20, and 21 happened at the beginning. So was the time of the judges a good time? Do you know there are people that go to the judges and say, this is a good guy? In those days, there was no king in Israel. Vast majority of those judges were as weird as a bedbug. You say, what about every one of the guys you do that with? There's another whole side to that person. We don't even have time to mess with Gideon this morning because we wouldn't get finished. Because some of you think Gideon is the man, and I would say, yeah, no. Well, let's look at Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. Cliffy. All right, we're not going to read anymore. We're just going to say what? Ruth, which used to be part of Judges, logically is part of Judges because it's in the era of? Yes. There's only one other book in the era of the Judges, and that's 1 Samuel at the beginning because Samuel is the first of the prophets, the last of the judges. Samuel comes as close as anybody in the Bible as representing Christ as prophet, priest, and he doesn't get to king but as judge. He comes very close. Acts says he's the first of the prophets. He was certainly the last of the judges. Okay? That's an era, folks. The children of Israel leave Egypt, they go into the land, and they have judges. It's supposed to be a good time. Everybody's supposed to have direct access to God, and God was supposed to be the king, and every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Well, excuse me, one man didn't. His name was Boaz. Boaz is totally different, as I preach many times in this church. Godly guy. Let's go to Revelation, please. Revelation chapter 6. And I'm going to spend a few minutes here and we'll be done. I hope. Revelation 6. Now, I have more stuff that I'm not going to talk about, but let me just say this to all of you. When you read the Bible, you have to read the Bible as it is written, not how you would write it. Is that fair? You have to hear how it's put together, not the way you think it should be. I didn't do a good job last week. We didn't do enough chapters. But if you read Jeremiah towards the end, you're going to go, because he keeps bouncing around chronologically. Now, he tells you, but if your knowledge of chronology is not good, you're just like, well, who made that choice? People make that, God makes that choice. Just like we use the illustration of the great movie, which Atong, if you don't have this, you've got to get this for Christmas. It's one of the few movies I could recommend that I think is actually worthwhile. And it was made, Frenchie was already old, but it was a long time ago. No, it was made in 1939, but you're close. It was made in the golden era of movies, 1939, Frenchie. You know this because what other movies were made? You were an old... Gone with the Wind. It was just an unbelievable stagecoach with John Wayne. It was the great year of movies, supposedly. All right. But the point of the movie is what? When you watch it as a kid, you're like, except when you come to the monkeys. Yes. Our mom doesn't let you see that part. You watch it a little older. You like the music. It's a very fun movie. We still got great music. Then you watch it one day, like I did as an adult, and realize it was all a dream and I was angry. It's like, what? So, The Wizard of Oz. By the way, that's how the movie works. That's how books are written. All right, Revelation 6. Revelation is written, in my way of understanding, chronologically, like this. It has the vision of Christ in chapter 1. Chapter 1, chapter 2 and 3 is Christ and the church and the seven churches, which I think are seven literal churches because of the number 7, which has symbolic aspects also. It probably means seven kinds of churches, meaning basically broadly conceived. And then as you look forward, these are the things in Revelation 1:9 that he has seen. These are the things which are, and these are the things which shall be hereafter. And that's broadly Revelation 1:19, how the book is written. He tells you how he's going to put it together. This part then deals with what we call the 7-year tribulation. There are 7 seals, which are more or less chronological, but they don't necessarily have to be staged chronologically, meaning in this sense. On day 1 and then, 1 year later, 2 year, not like that. It could happen, boom, boom, boom. But the 7 seals and the 7th seal happening in the middle, which then unleashes 7 trumpets, judgments, which then the 7th trumpet unleashes the 7 bowls or vials or whatever they are. And we're going to read some of that in a moment. So it's kind of a chronological movement forward. But I'm going to give you some stuff so you can write down, so you can do this. As I said, and I've said now 2 weeks in a row, Revelation has something weird. Revelation has footnotes. Now, if you do not read academically, and in this room, let's see, Daniel, do you have to read any academic stuff when you're in school? Do they have footnotes sometimes? If you read theological literature, sometimes you're like, too many footnotes, too many footnotes. Now, if all you read is the newspaper, no footnotes. But any kind of academic stuff, you're going to have footnotes. Revelation has footnotes. What's a footnote? Or if you don't prefer a footnote, an aside. Or if you don't know what an aside is, you're going in the movie, and you're moving forward in the movie, and all of a sudden there's a scene that's not chronological that explains something about somebody. It's a flashback. How about that? Are you catching on to the idea? I don't care what you call it. See, don't get caught up in what you call it. It's simply how the book of Revelation is written. Revelation 6 begins the actual tribulation period. Cliffy, read verse 1 and 2. All right, we're not going to read any more of this. We're just going to simply say this. Chapter 4 and 5 take place in heaven, and we're searching for the person who is worthy to open the seals and pour out God's wrath upon the earth. Who is worthy in this room? Why not, Frenchie? Okay, but you've just circled around. Why are you not Jesus Christ? John chapter 8 says what? We're already guilty, so how are we going to pour out God's wrath? He that is without sin among you. Yes or no? Of course, he could go through all of heaven, earth, hell, every place. No one's worthy except one person. He's not only worthy because he's sinless, he's also worthy because he has redeemed us. He's paid a price. Christ is going to pour out. Now I know, by the way, you talk to people in the modern world, we're hugging Mother Earth. We're the nonsense that said today, oh Lord, help me. And by the way, I believe in protecting what God's given us as much as we can. But we do have to live here. Unless we want to kill some folks off. Let's get rid of a few billion. Now who gets to choose? All right. So we're in these scenes happen in heaven. For all of your information, what happens in heaven is the most important thing. Because all of this comes out of a God who is holy. So you're going to constantly step aside and hear about what's going on there. Because what's going on there is going to impact what's going to happen here. You say, well, we're not going to be here. Well, I'm not going to be here. How about you? You say, well, I'm not. I don't know. I would hope that all believers would be gone. I'm sure all believers will be gone, all those who are saved. So you go through the seals. Let's look over at the end of chapter 6. You get down to verse 12. It's the sixth seal. So he's opened the sixth seal. And we're going to read it. It says, and I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood, and the stars of heaven fell upon the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. I don't know about you, but you just think about that for a minute. Does that scare you? Now, I know if you read Amillennial Guys, that's symbolic of something else. But if that's real, folks, and I think it is, during that middle of the tribulation period, things aren't going to be good. It goes on to say, and heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island removed out of their places. Judah, I think you experienced an earthquake. May I say this, and you know I like you. You experienced a tiny one. If this is true, you're talking about a worldwide shaking of this world. You're talking about, you know, is it asteroids? Maybe. Sounds like it. Breaking up of things. Hitting the earth. Verse 15, and the kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondman and every freeman, they hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the, what's that statement? See, we love the love of the Lamb, the love of God, but folks, there is the other side. And let me say this. The wrath of the Lamb of God has already been seen on this earth. At Calvary, when the Son of God said, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, he was suffering the wrath of God. This is no joke. This can't be twisted into politics are bad this year. Trump must be in charge. Okay. Verse 17, for the great day of his wrath has come. You say, when is this? About the middle of the tribulation period. I think a whole bunch of other things are loosed. Now you go into chapter 7. Chapter 7 is an aside. So what I'm going to do is give you a broad chronology, if I might. When you go to chapter 4 through 5, that's chronological, meaning in heaven. Got it? Mary, this is what I told you I was going to do for you, so this is the reason I'm doing it. Chapter 6, chronologically. But when you get to chapter 6, verse 17, to chapter 8, verse 1, You have whatever term you prefer to call it. And aside, because he's going to seal some people. But those people were not necessarily sealed in the middle of the tribulation. Actually, we know they were not. You understand? It's an aside. Meaning what? Not chronological. Yes. So let's look over to chapter 8, verse 1. Finally, after this aside, and what is this aside? This aside is about 144,000 Jewish believers that were sealed, and an unknown number of people who get saved during this time who are martyred. It actually says it's a number that no man can number. So will people get saved during the tribulation period? Well, yeah, probably get dead too, most of them. So in verse 8, or chapter 8, verse 1, and when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of a half an hour. Why would there be silence? When 9/11 happened, for all of you that were old enough, and some of you aren't, and weren't here, when you watch people, they screamed. You know, when you're in the face of something this horrific, there's one side that screams and there's another side that... In the presence of God, if you chase this down, by the way, this is an important verse for you, because Americans cannot be silent. By the way, if I was to give you one tip on reading the scripture, turn the nonsense off. Be still and know that I am God. Now, you don't have to do that in some special place. You can do that in your car. Please don't close your eyes if you're praying in your car. Please. I have to say these things. And it's really weird because sometimes I've been with people and we're going to eat and I'm driving and they say, why don't you pray for the food? It's hard to pray with your eyes open. Do you know that? But I'm not close. Thank you. I'll pray with them open when I'm driving. My friend, being silenced is simply in awe of what God is doing. You find this in the book of Habakkuk, chapter 2. Cliffy, look it up for us. Chapter 2, verse 20. You find this in a lot of places. Zephaniah. You find a lot of places when God is showing himself, people are silent. I think it's Habakkuk 2, verse 20, Cliffy. He has to find it first. Old man. Thank you. Revelation 8, verse 2. And I saw the seven angels which stood before him, and to which were given seven trumpets. So out of that seventh seal, many, many good writers and preachers have said, like a telescope, out of the seven seals, the seventh one comes seven trumpet judgments. They chronologically follow, just like that. So from 8, verse 2 to chapter 9, let's see, and it's 9, verse 21. You more or less follow chronologically again. Everything moves forward through trumpet judgments. Let's look, if you would, verse 20 of chapter 9. And the rest of the men, which were not killed by these plagues, and by the way, this is a hard verse to read. It doesn't make sense to me. It's incomprehensible to any Christian. The rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship demons and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts. My friend, D.L. Moody was a great preacher 100 plus years ago, died in 1899. He decided that his theme would not be the wrath of God, but the love of God. And he did a great job of evangelizing. But remember this, nothing melts. The only person that can open a person's eyes is the sovereign work of God. And they're to the bitter end. Here it is. You say, that's crazy. Yeah, it is. All right, from chapter 10, verse 1, all the way over to chapter 11, verse 15. Is another aside. So let's go to 11, verse 15. Do you understand what we're doing? Everything is moving forward. in heaven, first seals, then you have this explanatory aside, or a footnote, or whatever, a flashback in a movie. Then you have more action, and then you have another explanatory aside. 11, verse 15. And the seventh angel did what? By the way, we're still moving forward. The author is just stepping aside, explaining things. So then you have the seventh angel sounding. I think the seventh angel sounds with a trumpet somewhere. You know, we don't have a chronology of these 3.5 years. You know, there's 3.5 here, 3.5 here. I do know this. It seems like when you're reading the book, it's like you ever push a car down a hill and it's hard to get it started. And then once it gets started, it starts moving, and then it's like moving too fast. I've actually done that before in the country, and you're pushing the car from the door, somebody's helping you, and you get it going, and you can't hardly get in the car to get it rolling. Of course, you'd have to have a manual transmission for that to even help you. I'm dating myself. Anyhow, what's a manual transmission? Cassie, can you drive a manual? You've heard of it, read about it in history books. All right. Does everybody understand where we're at? All right. Then we have what? We have another aside from chapter 11, verse 15, all the way, go over to chapter 15, verse 1. Cliffy, read 15, verse 1. So really, 11 verse 15 comes on, tells you about the seventh trumpet, and then you have this long section. It's the longest section in Revelation. Here, hear me. This is nothing but, let me tell you some more things about what's going on. My favorite chapter, and I am going to teach on this. I'm going to teach on the eschatology of Satan, I think. I have all the notes. I haven't written it all. What do I mean? Chapter 12 steps aside and says, let's talk about Satan. Let's talk about his history. It doesn't tell you when he was created, but it tells you what? It tells you there was a war in heaven, the beginning of time, and he and a third of his angels were cast out. Yes? It also tells you, I think right here, more or less right here in the middle of the tribulation, finally he will no longer have access to God. Remember Job chapter 1? He has what? He has access to God. And he goes to God, and what does he do? He accuses the brethren. He's going to be cast out, and when he's cast out in the middle of the tribulation period, he knows his time is very short, and he's not happy. A lot of things happen, but it's a total aside. It's not about the chronology. It just steps aside and says, let's talk about Satan for a while. Chapter 13 says, let's talk about those two beasts. And people say, oh, those beasts aren't real beasts. The first beast is really an empire. God bless you. In Revelation 19 and 20, it says that beast is going to be thrown into hell. That beast is a real, it's called the Antichrist. The second one is the false prophet. So there's several asides here. So, 4 and 5, heaven. 6, the seals. Then there's some asides. Then you have chronology. You have most of the trumpets. And then you have another aside. Then you have, really 11 verse 15 kind of shows up. Then you have a big aside. And when you come back at 15:1, let's look at 15. Oh, let's see here. Read verse 2 with me. And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingle with fire. And them that had gotten the victory over the beast, and over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, great and marvelous are thy works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are thy ways, thou King of saints. Who shall not fear thee, O Lord, and glorify thy name? For thou art holy. For all nations shall come and worship before thee, for thy judgments are made manifest. And I looked, and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was open. And the seven angels came out of the temple, having the seven plagues clothed in pure and white linen, having their breasts girded with golden girdles. And one of the four beasts gave unto the seven angels seven golden vials or bowls full of the wrath of God, who liveth forever and ever. By the way, these are not love poems. These are full of the wrath of God. Chapter 16, it picks this back up. Let's see here. Where did I see this at yesterday? All the way over to verse 17 of chapter 16. Now, friend, as far as the tribulation, three and a half, when you get to the last one of these bowls or vials, you are at the conclusion. The only thing that's going to happen after that is Christ will come. He will establish his kingdom, judge the world. That's the beginning of that. I mean, that's the good news here. So we are almost there. When you get to here in verse 17, the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying what? Yeah, this is, by the way, some people will do this. They'll say, these seven is a symbol. And there are seven seals, and they're equal to the seven trumpets, which are equal to the seven vials or bowls, and they're just cyclical. It's like, that's all nice, but when you read the text, it's saying this. When we get to this point, it's all over. It's all finished. That starts 15, verse 1 through 16, basically. All right, let's continue reading. Verse 18 says, and there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided in three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came into remembrance before God, to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every mountain fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. Now, nobody knows exactly what that weighs, other than it's pounds. I was in a hailstorm one time. I've told the story where we got hail about that big around. That will kill you if it hits you enough. Does unbelievable, and most of the time hail is this big. Once in a while you get little ones. That go right through your house. What are you going to do, get under your roof? That's going to work. It goes on to say, and men blaspheme God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. Well, we go to there. So everybody get chronology. Heaven, seals, we have an aside. We move forward with the trumpets, we have an aside. We really just have one verse, and then we have a long aside that covers a lot of different details. Chapter 15 through chapter 16 is chronology. Actually, at the end of this, we're finished. But then you have chapter 17 and chapter 18, which are long asides. There are asides about Babylon. I'm not going to get into this. Pastor Kwok will teach you all about that, especially there's one verse in chapter 17. I have no idea what it means, but I know he does. Then you finally come to chapter 19 to chapter 22, and these are chronological. So really, folks, if you want to read the book chronologically, read chapter 4, 5, and 6, skip to chapter 8, do 8 and 9, skip over to 11, 15, one verse, skip forward to 15 and 16, skip over to 19 to 22, look at me, you can walk right through the book and get exactly how it falls out. And by the way, starting tomorrow, you should do it because you won't be as confused. You will have this in your head. You understand what this is. And once you get the chronology, guess what you do then? You go back and read those asides and say, oh, I see where it fits in. I see where this makes sense now. You say, I don't like this. You didn't write it and I didn't write it. God wrote it. Through John. This is what he wanted to reveal for us to know the basic outline of the future. So we have heaven, things begin, we have the seals, we have the trumpets, the seventh trumpet, we have the vials or bowls, we have more footnotes, and we have the second coming of Christ, the millennium, and then the final judgment of the unsaved and eternity. Here it is, chronologically. I'm going to move it here. Questions on that? You have a couple minutes if you have questions. Now, if you don't write it down and actually read it this way, you have wasted your time, not mine. Because this will help you actually understand the book. You say, Pastor Warren, where did you learn this from? From a book. You know where I learned it from? Reading the book. And I started to realize he's just stepping aside and giving us further information. Have you ever tried to tell a story? When you teach, you do this all the time, Dada. When you try to tell a story, you realize you got to tell another story to explain your story. That's the book of Revelation. It's like you're talking about Satan, but I need to give you more information. All through the book, he mentions the beast. Chapter 13, he talks about the beast and the false prophet. That's it, straight through the book. Now, last thought is this. It's in your notes. Numbers. There are three views of numbers in the book of Revelation. I don't know how I have them written. I'm not going to look at my notes. You have to think. The book of Revelation has lots of numbers. Numbers can either be literal. Do we ever use numbers any other way? Yes, sometimes they're symbolic. Most people from our school of thought believe the book of Revelation's numbers are literal. Unless it kind of indicates they're not. But may I say this, they can also be literal, listen, and. So when it talks about seven churches, you don't really assume that there was only seven churches in Asia Minor. There were lots of churches. So he chooses seven churches that kind of, I think, represent seven kind. How about this? Seven kinds of people. Seven kinds of churches. But when it talks about seven churches, I'm pretty sure there were, how many churches were there? I'm pretty sure there were seven. But there were more, but I mean, there were these seven. So I think the numbers in Revelation, if you ask Pastor Warren, are this. Most of the time, they're just literal numbers. 1,000 means, unless I have a reason for it not to mean that. 144,000, especially when it tells you they're Jews. And it not only tells you they're Jewish, it tells you which tribe they're from. I know I'm not a bright guy, but it's like, I think they're Jewish. You say, but 12,000 is a round number. Oh, I'm going to round your head off in a minute. Why does it use the... I have no reason to explain why it uses the language. But my recommendation is when you read, most of it's literal. There might be symbolic uses of numbers here and there. When Jesus said 7 times 70... When you forgive somebody, but Chungai's got her list. Dada, you got 2 more times, and I'm not forgiving you after that. Oh, I'm sorry, that was Navy, too. You that way, Navy? He's already exceeded the 490, though, so there's no hope. By the way, it's not talking 490. Sometimes numbers are symbolically. For a just man falleth... That's using the number symbolically. It's not like every just man, every single just man on earth, did you know, falls exactly 7 times. And that's the kind of preaching that you're like, oh, let me out of here quick. But in the book of Revelation, I assume the numbers are literal, and they might be literal and pointing to more things. But if it says 7 trumpets, I know I'm simple. I'm guessing 7 trumpets. Okay? Does that help you with numbers? When I get to Revelation 20 and it talks about 1,000 years, I assume 1,000 years. When it talks about as the sand which is by the seashore, I think that's a pretty big number. When it talks about forever, I'm pretty sure that means forever. When it talks about a short time, I assume that means that's numbers. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this day. Bless our time together, we ask in Jesus' name.